Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios in Washington. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening, we'll talk about income inequality in Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. Welcome back to the show, Vincent.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're very much welcome. And also joined by a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He joins us, as usual, from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Suleiman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. As I said, our topic tonight, we are looking at income inequality in Africa. 10 of the world's 19 most unequal countries are in sub-Saharan Africa. Economic inequality, sometimes referred to as income inequality, is the unequal distribution of a country's wealth. South Africa, the continent's most developed economy, is also the world's most unequal. Botswana, Namibia, and Zambia are also among the top 19. Vincent, sad situation there.
It's a very sad situation for a continent that is awash with mineral resources, a continent that is so wealthy in terms of minerals, that has a vibrant population of young people, and in some cases, in some countries, highly educated people. Many years after so many of the countries, of course, attained independence. Of course, South Africa has come out of apartheid, but it's so sad that it has stayed, of course, the way it is, because the wealth was concentrated among very, very few people. And even the leadership of, we could say, all black leadership has not done much to correct the situation. So really, it's a sad tale when you look across the continent.
Yes, Suleiman, where you are based there is Africa's biggest economy, and it's where things are the worst. Of course, we understand the issues of apartheid and all that, but in the last several years, there hasn't been an improvement yet.
It is very difficult because, as you are saying, we had so many years of apartheid, and the new black government actually inherited it. And in such a big burden, it meant that it needed a lot of restructuring. Which restructuring we are still grappling with. A lot of restructuring, social restructuring, economic restructuring is taking place, but the task was so great. The job itself is so high, so much that you find that still a very big chunk, we top the list. Because however much you try, the population is growing fast, and then the opportunities are not growing at the level at which the population is growing. So much as there is some attempt, but it's not easy to beat the target, and we are still topping the list, as you have said.
And Vincent, of course, before we go to what can be done about this situation, The repercussions of this inequality are obvious, right, from Nigeria. Some people have attributed the Boko Haram issue not only to political issues, but to issues of ignorance, income inequality, poverty, and all that.
Yes. When you have high levels of inequalities, high levels of poverty, you have also cases where families are not able to take their children to school. Therefore, you have a whole population that is growing up without proper education, which can lead to ignorance and an easily manipulatable population of youth. And poverty, of course, leads people to desperate acts. We have seen people in droves trying to cross over to Europe to try and make a living there, because back home things are rough. We can see the repercussions in places like South Africa now, where when people are living in grinding poverty, they look around, and when they see other people seemingly doing well, and then they happen to come from other places, but even including their countrymen, they get resentful. And sometimes they cannot figure out why things are the way they are, even if it means that they themselves don't have the capacity to create wealth, perhaps because of lack of proper training and education. They will always take it out on somebody. And that somebody might be the person with a little kiosk on the roadside. That somebody could be a person who has a job that pays him well to stay in a more decent place. Mm. Crime rates go high, of course. And so it is the repercussions are so apparent, and in fact they're so far reaching in society that sometimes it's hard now to fix so many other problems that afflict many societies, as long as you have this level of poverty and this level of class difference within a society.
Suleiman, coming back to where you are right now, some people have argued that it's less of xenophobia, but more of these hardships, poverty, that brings up the resentment and this perpetual violence, and even the very high rates of crime in the country.
Yes. In South Africa, every leader that has come in, that is the first observation which he has met, that we have got the triple problem of poverty, unemployment, inequality. Those are the major problems which we have in South Africa. And as I have said, ours was apartheid death, in the sense that in order for you to have equal distribution of wealth in a country, you have to have people working. Now, that's one of the steps. Now, we find in South Africa, the labor-intensive activities, mainly agriculture, it was dominated by whites. So you find that it was highly mechanized, a few blacks were employed there, and those who were employed there, the wages were so low. Our wage levels were very, very low. Now, as an intervention, so because the people are not well skilled, they cannot enter into any employment. Because they are unemployed, you find they are poor. So when they are poor, then they are restless. That is why, as you are saying, most of our problem, because you find that at the moment, as an intervention, South Africa is one of the best social protection systems. We have got out of 50 million people, we have got almost 17 million people on social grants, which is effectively paid. That is part of the intervention. In addition to that one, there are also aggressive programs in education to see that, for example, we have got free primary education and the secondary education in order to get people to get some skills so as to be able to enter into the job market. So all these ones are intervention, but still, because it is an inherited problem, the numbers are so big, they are trying, but they cannot. So as the levels of unemployment increase, at the moment we are moving to over 27% unemployment. So with all those levels of unemployment, poverty is increasing, then there is desperation. And once you have got all that desperation, you have got social problems, social strife. Mm-hmm. That is why we have got all these uprisings. It is out of more poverty and inequality than xenophobia, as you have put it.
I see. Vincent, the other interesting fact is that despite all this, if you travel to any African capital, there is signs of boom. The economies are booming. It's only that the wealth is going to a few hands.
Yes. The African countries are led by a kind of a cartel. It's a cartel of wealthy, corrupt people who hoard all the wealth of the nation among themselves. Many times a very tiny minority at the top. And the only way to get in, you have to join the political class. Most of the wealth is concentrated by people who are either in politics or connected to politicians. There are a few diehard private citizens who are engaged in businesses, but it is exceedingly difficult in most countries. So what happens is that even if the country generates some wealth, even if a country builds wealth, whether from their resources or from investments from foreign investors, most of that money, most of the wealth is flowing only to those few, because they have created the structure such that if you are outside of that little circle of these mercenary leaders, you can really not benefit from the wealth of the nation. And you can go to countries that are wealthy in terms of natural resources, whether we talk about Equatorial Guinea, and look at how much wealth they have in terms of oil, and then ask yourself, for the population of that country, why would you have people so poor when the president, his children, his cronies, and his close friends are billionaires? I mean, it's a country where you could actually, technically, you could, theoretically, let me say, you could actually give every citizen $1 million and the country will still be okay. Why should wealth be concentrated among five people, 10 people? And you can go across the continent. It's the same story, whether you're talking about Kenya, Uganda, you're talking about
DR Congo.
These countries are not necessarily extremely poor, but you look at the distribution of the wealth of their whatever the country is making, whether it is through agriculture, through minerals, through any form of investment, tourism, the money ends up in the hands of just a few people who live extremely privileged lives in an exclusive neighborhoods in all the big cities, and some of them even have homes and other luxurious things abroad. So yes, it's a poorer continent, the poorest in the world yet, or rather still, but the little that the continent has is concentrated in the hands of very few.
And in South Africa, it's very marked, Suleiman, because you have these major big corporations owned by South Africans. You're talking of the MTN, the DSTVs. These are owned by South Africans. But then if you walk across the street in downtown Johannesburg, you'll see the misery of some of the people.
Yeah, the biggest population actually is excluded from the main economy. Yes, I don't want to say South Africa is like the rest of the continent. They are attempts to reverse the situation. It is only that the government is being overwhelmed by the nature of the problem. Otherwise, as I've said, the attempts to intervene through education, through universal health care, a lot of infrastructure projects are being carried on year and year on, water projects, and then in addition to all these projects which are aimed at creating opportunities and creating incomes for the people, you have got the intervention, which is the social protection program, which has got a variety of grants. And that one is well efficient, and it is carrying out and it's helping. There is there are grants for old age, there are grants for sick people, there are grants for children, quite a number of them, which the government spends a lot of money on. Actually, some opposition parties like the DA, which has got a very big element of white people, are actually even against social grants. They are saying it is a very big burden to the fiscus. But the government, the ANC government, is trying its best to try to intervene and create at least some level of equality in the society as compared to the continent. I think with the continent, if I leave South Africa, I think it is a different position, as my brother has said. There, I think for the continent, we cannot talk about inequality without talking about the structural adjustment program. That it skewed the economy, the traditional sectors which had been set post independence, which would have been able to reduce the inequality in society, were badly affected by the structural adjustment programs which were introduced by the IMF and World Bank in the 80s. I think after that, our systems like agriculture, which was supposed to accelerate incomes for the people, the manufacturing industry has also been affected right now by the Chinese intervention. But the other ones, from the beginning, the growth was affected by the structural adjustment program. Now, what came in after structural adjustment program, as Vincent has said, the emphasis on finance, on business, on tourism, all these ones, the economy, the the income which they generate gets its way into the corrupt hands of the elites who are leading the country. That is why on the continent it's so difficult to make a dent in the poverty levels of the citizens.
Okay, before I respond, let me first reintroduce the program.
Yes.
That for those who are just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight we're discussing income inequality in Africa. Our panelists are my colleague Vincent Makori and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here. So, Vincent, you're going to respond to what Suleiman just said.
Mm.
Actually, that's a very crucial point. That
it is.
The inequality was excavated by these structural adjustment programs. They killed the agricultural sector. They killed the cooperative movement.
Yeah.
They killed the parastatos. And then the corruption took off.
Exactly. Mm. And remember, some of the structural adjustment programs were geared towards eliminating a level of poverty, the levels of poverty,
yes,
so that they can spur economic growth.
Mm.
Of course, anybody who was conscious and had a brain at that time could tell that they worked negatively in terms of, for example, forcing countries to lay off very young populations that had nothing to fall back to.
Mm.
Of course, trying to manage the economies of Africa from Washington without consideration of the differences within the internal networks, workings of every individual economy.
Mm.
But still, I can go back to what I always believe is that Africa has never taken full control of its own economy.
You think the economy Africa will growth. Ever do that?
African leaders have ceded their development to the external world and to the colonial masters and others that are now coming in. And for them, they've just seen leadership as a way to help themselves and hope for the best, and in some cases expect somebody to come from outside and change the fortunes of the people internally. When you look closely to the continent, one of the things that I think has kept the continent down, and that's why this big wealth gap remains and lack of development, is that first there is complacency. You ask any African leader, he will tell you that he believes his country is doing so well. Whether he has been in power for 30 years or 35 years, he will tell you that the country is doing so well,
yes,
and that he has every right to continue ruling because he has led the country so well. But when you look around the country, you see the grinding poverty among the citizens. So that's one problem. There is no fire in the belly of African leaders to elevate their countries to where, say, the Asian tigers are. There is no interest whatsoever. Secondly, there is almost an apathetic approach to leadership, to how they lead their people. There's no interest in alleviating the conditions of the common people.
Mm.
They drive in their luxurious vehicles. They fly around the countries in helicopters and private planes, while the people walking barefoot down in the villages, living in mud and grass-thatched houses.
Mm.
There is no interest, really, in taking the people out of the poverty that they've lived in for decades since independence. So that is a big problem, if you ask me. Then there is the mercenary mentality of African leadership, where the leaders behave as if they're here for a moment to take as much as they can and disappear into some other world that we don't know, which sometimes we know. They come and buy homes abroad and live in Switzerland, some live in the United States.
Mm.
So the fact that the West may have in some ways pushed some policies on Africa that undermine the growth of the economies, I think has to still be understood within the context that African leaders failed and have continually failed to take control of their own economies.
Mm.
Right now, we are now seeing what? China has come in.
Mm.
So now China is setting the agenda for the continent. Where are the African leaders? You see them trooping to China to be told exactly what to do.
Yeah.
Nobody on the continent has the backbone to say, this is a continent where we have so much wealth. This is the agenda we're going to set. And let's work with you as our external partners. You have some money to spend on this continent. These are the terms. This is how we're going to run our economies with your assistance, especially China is giving loans.
Mm.
China is not giving any handouts.
No, it's loans.
So you're taking loans without questioning the terms of those loans. Who is in charge? We are not in charge of our economies, and therefore we will never I don't think we can ever predict when the continent will ever come to, you know, to a level where it is economically strong and able to tackle the issues that afflict the people.
And for purposes of emphasis, this inequality, it has, in some cases, it's become terrible. For instance, there's a study done by Oxfam in Nigeria. For instance, the scale of inequality levels are extreme. Five of Nigeria's wealthiest people, including Africa's richest man, Dangote, have a combined wealth of almost $30 billion, more than the country's entire 2017 budget. And about 60% of Nigerians live on less than $1.25 a day. That's the threshold for absolute poverty. 60% of Nigerians, we're talking about over 100 million people in dire poverty, when just a handful, five of Nigeria's wealthiest people have $30 billion. So how does the continent or individual countries get out of this, short of an uprising among the people? Suleiman, do you have an idea as what can be done? People talk about education.
I agree with you, people, that really the inequality which we have in Africa is man-made, and the bigger percentage of it is attributed to leadership. Because as recent has said, our leaders have got a laissez-faire attitude towards development, towards alleviating people's poverty. I mean, how can a country like Kenya, a government, let's say, of Kenya, allow maybe about three districts to lose livestock and people are driven into abject poverty when there is a government? You go to Uganda, they have got nice soils, they tell people to produce, then you find people have produced maize, it rots. There is no market for it. There are no silos or stores for it to store it and then be able to sell it when the seasons are not good. How can countries like Uganda suffer into food shortage? That shows there is lack of leadership. A country like DRC, it has got both mineral wealth and even land wealth. It has got climate, it has got land, it can produce, but the leaders are blind. They are not bothered. They are after their stomachs. They are after their day-to-day, from hand to mouth. For them, they are rich. The citizens are poor. That is why we are emphasizing and we are saying it is the leadership which is to blame for the inequality which is on the continent. Look at leaders in developed countries. We had the 2007-2008 economic crisis. Obama straight away took responsibility, developed stimulus programs, intervened into the economy, pushed money, injected money into the economy, and was able to contain the recession, was able to resuscitate the economy, and then the economy bounced back, and now America is back into the right path. If it was Africa, then we go into, for example, if you have had a drought, the millions or thousands of animals will be killed, will die, the plants will be washed away by drought, and the government will be there watching, and they will continue, as this and I said, they will continue driving to France for holidays, they will continue driving in their limousines, not bothered about what is happening to the people, while millions of people are pushed into abject poverty deliberately without them caring at all.
Actually, I wanted to kind of add on to that. I think when I look around the continent, I feel like, we have actually 50 years after independence for those countries that got independence from Britain and France. We almost to some degree, part of the poverty is by choice, not of the people, but of the leadership.
Well, the leadership, yes.
We have traveled quite a distance, and if we could learn lessons from Singapore's and from the Asian tigers, those countries came from poverty, but the leadership drove the countries into unbelievable economic growth. Whether you're talking about countries like the Emirates, which were
Dubai.
Like Dubai countries.
Idi Amin used to give them for aid.
Exactly. These are people who used to be living in the desert in tents and some minor structures there. Look at where they are today. If you look at closely at how they ended up where they are, it's leadership. A leadership that has an ambition for the country. A leadership that also has compassion. One of the biggest things that lacks among African leaders is compassion. Why do I say compassion? They don't feel for the people. Why would you have, years after independence, not a good enough hospital for an African politician, for an African leader to go? But you can go to London, you can go to Geneva, you can go and live for months in London, and you come from Nigeria, but your fellow citizens are dying every day from minor things like childbirth. Women die because they can't just get a proper service, just delivering their babies. People die of malaria and so many other things. Yet, here's a country where they make billions of dollars over the decades. Or as you've mentioned, a country has billions of dollars concentrated among just a few people. But in that country, you cannot have a hospital that is good enough for you and your fellow citizens. We're talking here about many of the African countries, including Kenya and others. The fact that you can take yourself elsewhere with money that you've made out of taxpayers' money or loans that were given that will be paid back by these poor people, but you can take part of that money, go abroad and get yourself good, the best of health care, take your children to the best schools abroad with money that you got out of the shoulders of this poor citizen. Where is the compassion? I feel there's no compassion among African leaders.
We're running out of time.
Actually, listen.
Go ahead, but
listen. Imagine what is happening in Africa is a shame. It is brutal. Imagine one man called the late Mugabe. Citizens are dying of poverty. He throws the party $1 million. One man called Museveni. One of his travels inland or external when he travels, the travel expenses, the entourage, because internally he moves with about 50 cars, the expenses he spends are enough for a day if he is going to move for a trip, are enough to build a hospital. But people die when there are no hospitals. A man like Biya of Cameroon, he stays perpetually in France and he takes over a whole hotel on government expenses. So what kind of leaders do we have on the continent?
I see. Now, gentlemen, we're about a minute left.
Yes.
Can this one, is of course not sustainable, but can the people, the masses, the general masses, the millions of Africans, can they stand this without maybe breaking up and doing something about it?
It doesn't help. Unfortunately, there is always need for good leadership to get a country moving forward. There's no other way.
Suleiman?
I agree with you, Vincent, because look at Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has collapsed in the hands of Mugabe. When other people are seeing, the same is Uganda, the same is Cameroon. So you always need leadership to lead. The people are crying; they want leadership to pull them out of that. So unless we have thrown away the rusty leaders who are occupying their seats on the continent, we won't make a dent in the inequality and poverty which is raging on the continent.
I see. Well, we shall keep an eye on the inequality in Africa. But that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor, VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, my pleasure having you on the show.
It's a delight. Thank you.
Yep. Our
producer, as usual, was Jackson Mufunganyi. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at voanews.com. Click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks for joining us tonight. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout artists? New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.